Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Institute on Science for Global Policies podcast, the forum where science comes to socialize. Find something interesting on this show or any of our other episodes? Be sure to tweet us at ISGP Forum with hashtag ISGP Forum. If Twitter isn't your game, then you can also hit us up on our Facebook page by searching ISGP's The Forum. I'm Cleo, and with me today are my co-hosts Barbara and Aubrey. Let's get started.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Wait one second. I have a bone to pick with you, Cleo.
A what?
I have an issue with that opening introduction. I don't feel like it was very personalized, not very tailored to me. What makes me special from every other Barbara out there? What sets me apart?
Don't mind me butting in here, you two, but I think what Barbara's getting at is that sometimes it's really important to be more than just a name and to make sure what makes you an individual is noted. I don't think, however, the first line of our podcast is really the place for this personalization.
Seeing as it's pretty difficult to keep our personalities a secret on here anyway.
Right, but during a medical examination, for instance, personalization can mean everything.
Which is a key part of some major medical breakthroughs we'll be discussing today. So, Cleo, I guess I'll let you go this time so we can move forward with the episode.
Thank you, and my sincerest of apologies, you beautiful, nerdy Sherlock Holmes reading, epigenetics loving Barbara.
See? That wasn't so hard, was it?
Anyway, back to things that matter. Today's paper comes from a conference in our Science and Governance series that was held in September 2013 in the Houses of Parliament in London, and it was in conjunction with the Parliamentary Office of Science and Technology. If this sounds familiar, it's surely because you listened to episode 5, Genetic Modification Deliberation, which discussed another paper debated at this same conference. Today's paper is titled The Emerging Landscape of Medicine and Healthcare, which was written and defended by Dr. Leroy Hood, the president and co-founder of the Institute for Systems Biology located in Seattle.
So, the Institute on Science for Global Policy invited the Institute for Systems Biology? Sounds like a real ISGP-ISB party to me.
Holy acronyms. And if you listeners out there are interested in reading the paper and the debate summary for yourself, go to our website, scienceforglobalpolicy.org, and click on the Publications tab. Dr. Hood's paper focused on the idea of P4 medicine and how it has the potential to alter the face of modern medicine.
What does P4 stand for, you ask? Medical care that is predictive, preventative, personalized, and participatory.
Sounds like a hoax, right? But these are actually real, attainable goals towards which we have been making progress, thanks to recent advances in genomic and systems technologies that have emerged over the past few decades. Just so you're all caught up with these advances, let's go through what Dr. Hood highlighted in his paper. First, we have the revolutionizing of DNA diagnostics. New genetic approaches, such as the sequencing of a family's genome, essentially identifying and writing out the order of each person's genes, are allowing physicians to better identify disease genes and wellness genes in an individual's makeup. These approaches have already been used to identify genes for a variety of neurodegenerative diseases, as well as bipolar disorder and some metabolic diseases.
To prove just how great these advances are, I can't help but to bring up Angelina Jolie and her fight against her family's predisposition to breast cancer. A few years ago, the star had a genetic test performed and found out she was a carrier for the BRCA breast cancer gene, thus prompting her to get a preventative mastectomy. Her doctor's access to her genes might have saved her life.
Well, there you have it, folks. If Angelina Jolie is doing it, DNA diagnostics must be trendy.
And better yet, gene sequencing is advancing so rapidly that scientists are now predicting that in 5 to 8 years, we'll be able to sequence a person's entire genome in 15 minutes for $100.
And to think, it takes me at least 15 minutes just to get out of bed in the morning.
It takes me 15 minutes to think about getting out of bed in the morning.
Another cool, helpful aspect of this DNA revolution, if you will, is the group of actionable gene variants.
These variations of normal genes, if identified in an individual, can help doctors take smarter and more knowledgeable action against ailments. Currently, 300 have been identified.
Besides actionable gene variants, scientists have also identified 70 mutant genes that block patients from responding effectively to specific drugs. Seems like it'd be pretty useful to know if you have any of these genes before wasting time, money, and your own health on a drug that won't help you.
Speaking of useful things, how would you like to have access to the secret to living longer? To discover the proverbial fountain of youth, so to speak. Scientists are getting closer to solving this puzzle as 18 genomes of individuals 115 and older have been sequenced. Current efforts are exploring the genes that optimize aging traits, potentially minimizing those that may shorten life.
Next up, we have revolutionizing blood diagnostics. According to Dr. Hood, systems approaches to blood have made it the new window to the soul. Well, to an individual's health and disease, at least. These systems approaches have been able to identify blood biomarkers that have the potential to diagnose virtually any disease.
But we're not just talking about diagnoses here. System strategies for blood diagnostics can detect disease earlier, follow a disease progression, and even follow the response to therapy. Pretty impressive stuff, if you ask me.
For sure. Continuing on, advances also include the stratification of disease into different subtypes. Essentially, this means we can identify disease subtypes that may require unique therapies, therapies that might not have been selected otherwise. Again, quite the time and money saver.
Not to mention a potential lifesaver. The debaters went as far as to dub this strategy as transformational.
Yeah, that too.
Well, finally, we have more strategically targeted drug use, as well as the ongoing invention of cheaper and more effective drugs. It boils down to this. Combine the knowledge of drug targets with the pharmaceutical industry's keen ability to produce drugs, and voila, you have lots of useful drugs that can actually target a disease. Drug targets are just parts of the body impacted by a disease, and thus targeted by the disease's remedy, by the way.
Now that you have an idea of the potential here, let's see how our debaters weighed in on the subject. Also, try and keep in mind the fact that P4 stands for predictive, preventative, personalized, and participatory medical care.
So the debaters thought that the participatory nature of P4 medicine did not necessarily require that the population be scientifically literate, at least in the beginning stages. Which is good, because if we all had to be doctors, this plan would fall apart pretty quickly.
Right, so things like exercise and monitoring blood pressure and respiration don't take a medical degree.
Debaters also agreed that understanding and measuring epigenetic changes in DNA modifications, essentially how certain genes get turned on and off depending on environmental factors, could soon be understood at a global scale. A systems approach like this would provide new ways to integrate and model data that would give a deeper insight to how diseases manifest and proliferate.
Hold up, I feel like we're implying that modern medicine doesn't already have a wealth of knowledge on numerous diseases.
And the debaters actually mentioned this too. They argue that we may be overinvesting in these technological advances, which are expected to provide additional medical solutions, when there already exists tons of data available for analysis and interpretation.
True, one might argue that we should try and handle all of the existing info before delving into a virtual medical information abyss. On a more positive note, though, the debate did focus on some seemingly promising work being performed over at Dr. Hood's Institute for Systems Biology.
Yeah, this definitely seemed interesting. So apparently ISB has committed to a 20-year longitudinal study designed to frequently measure and analyze the complete genome sequence of 100,000 healthy participants. And these participants are going to be drawn from diverse societal backgrounds so that the researchers can better understand the individual impact of one's environment.
Before we leave this thought, it's important to note that genome samples for this and all other studies must be obtained from throughout the world's population. This must be done so that information doesn't just benefit the small sample of people able to afford to have their DNA analyzed.
Definitely a good thing to note, and particularly beneficial to this long-term study. By taking that hugely diverse bunch of people and grouping them according to similar genetic and environmental factors, ISB will be doing something current clinical data trials have never done before. Use their data to identify treatments tailored to the individual, no matter their genetic or environmental background.
And what's great is that all this information will be accumulated into a database that could be used for future analysis in things like spin-off companies or other studies seeking to better understand wellness and disease.
To give an example of how these new strategies in medical care can pay off, the system's approach to lung diagnostics has already resulted in $3.5 billion in cost savings, and it's suggested that this approach can be applied to any disease.
Adding to this, P4 Medicine promises to democratize healthcare information to a level previously unimaginable, potentially lowering costs to improve healthcare options in less affluent countries.
However,
there's always a however with these things.
There's still the worry that these targeted treatments will, in fact, end up costing more than conventional therapies. The net savings associated with systems approaches have yet to be determined.
But we just said $3.5 billion were saved. How is that not clear evidence of savings?
Well, while P4 medicine may reduce healthcare costs, new or additional social costs may occur as a result. For example, these could take the form of increased social security due to the increased longevity of life.
So we get punished for living longer. Fabulous.
The debaters did want to note that this is more of a failure of social science than the medical field.
That doesn't make me feel any better about it, you know.
Hey, we're just here to relay the information, not spread warm fuzzies.
True, although the two do coincide on occasion. Think how digital communication in India was once predicted to be unfathomable. Now, women living in even rural India can make a living with just their cell phones. Examples like this give us a tiny look into the potential opportunities waiting for us with the digitization of healthcare information and lower costs.
The integration of food and nutrition into the healthcare system is also a paradigm-shifting process, as we can go from a reactive to a preventative system.
Prevent disease with food? I feel like we've gone over this at some point before.
Indeed we have. You, our listeners, can go check out episode 8 on genetic modification in the food industry to hear what other debaters have had to say on the subject. This particular group of debaters suggested developing foods with higher nutritional density that could provide better preventative health care.
So a revamped version of an apple a day keeps the doctor away?
Exactly. And while current data on nutrition is fairly poor, P4 Medicine offers the potential to provide data through patient-activated social network geared towards efforts at preventative wellness.
What now?
The debaters thought that this nutritional social networking, even if it just took the form of family networks of medical and nutritional information, could characterize the population, family, or group's nutritional health. The debaters thought this might encourage people to eat better, you know, if they could see in their network how their food impacts their health.
I can see it now. Fruit book.
Or maybe...
Oh my gosh. Let's back it up here a second. We're talking about both citizens and doctors putting all of our medical information on some sort of network in order to be viewed more easily and perhaps as a collective unit. Now flashing through my head are all of the news headlines about data and information hackers getting access to crazy amounts of information. How will the public not be skeptical of this strategy?
This is a very good point that the debaters also recognized. They felt that in order to make the plan come together, it's crucial to assure the public that patient data will not be identified with individuals. Thanks to modern technology, we have encryption methods that ensure anonymity of this sensitive data.
But what could a hacker do with this massive amount of medical records, though? This seems revealing, but it involves relatively harmless information.
Well, the main concern relating to identity and privacy here is that we'd need to ensure that this information wouldn't be used for genetic discrimination. In other words, if you contribute to this data, you shouldn't live in fear that you'll be profiled by insurance companies, employers, governments, or families.
Because of this, we would have to ensure that appropriate and protective laws were put in place.
We should note that in the United States, a law is already in place to prevent just that. The Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act of 2008, or GINA, protects Americans from discrimination in both health insurance and employment.
We don't want to bar everyone from this health information, though, do we? I mean, someone has to analyze it, which will require a pretty expansive look at it all.
Definitely. And because of this, the debaters also agreed that uniform institutional review boards, or IRBs, are needed to allow qualified personnel to have unrestricted access to this medical data. Mind you, this is a level of access that departs from the usual restrictive and inconsistent access of modern IRBs.
Okay, so where is the money coming from for these projects? Is it a dependable source?
Funding for all of this is still kind of up in the air, it seems. The debaters did note that a paradigm shift in public funding for new programs is a critical challenge in the modification of healthcare objectives towards wellness and preventative care. Government healthcare organizations, such as the National Institutes of Health, or NIH, currently fund existing infrastructures but restrict funding to new types of programs.
So then different sources of funding, say philanthropic public funders, may be required to bring the expectations of P4 medicine to reality?
Yep, along with other forms of federal funding, international strategic partnerships, collaboration with industry, and venture capitalists.
And since discovery research is encouraged, yet the creation and marketing of new research-derived products is discouraged through exorbitant costs, it's super important that existing governmental regulations be continually reevaluated.
So we've thrown a lot of terms and concepts at you today, but we hope you were able to learn a little about these crazy bodies of ours and how scientists are doing even crazier things to find out how they function.
The important thing to note is that our speaker and debaters all agreed on the necessity of devoting time and effort to continue developing personalized and predictive medicine. All of this will give you a chance to prevent disease and participate in genome research for the greater good.
I see what you did there. Long live P4 medicine, man.
Well, now that you know what Dr. Hood and our debaters had to say on the matter, what did you find most riveting or promising in all of these medical advances?
Would you choose to have your genome up there in the medical community's version of the cloud? Better yet, how would you suggest maintaining a public access database without incurring unintended discriminatory consequences, say from employers or insurance companies? Can it be done?
Would you choose to find out if you are predisposed to have a curable disease? How does your answer change when that disease is fatal or severely debilitating?
Tweet your answers or any other questions to us at ISGPForum with hashtag ISGPForum. You can also write on our Facebook pages wall by searching ISGP's The Forum.
This is your turn to be around the Institute on Science for Global Policy's debate table, so make it count. Don't let your opinion or comments go unheard.
But don't just do it for yourself. Do it for us. Give us a reason to continue sciencing. Leave a comment, and let's strike up a conversation so that these issues don't just get put to rest.
And so that our friends and families can get a break from our 24/7 nerding out.
It would definitely make a few people in my life happier if I was able to channel into Twitter my attempts to never stop socializing with science.
I think all three of us share this problem.
All right. Before we get carried away again, I'm going to say that's all we have for today. Thank you so much for listening, and be sure to check us out next time right here on the forum.
The Institute on Science for Global Policy, or ISGP, is a nonprofit organization that convenes international meetings bringing together scientists, policymakers, industry leaders, students, and other stakeholders to discuss pertinent scientific issues facing society. The ISGP has no opinions and does not lobby. Therefore, the preceding podcast reflects the views expressed by the presenters and debaters at our conference. For more information, please visit our website at www.scienceforglobalpolicy.org. Thank you.